A syllogism, it works like this. It says A is B. The universe is contingent. All B is C. Every contingent thing depends on a necessary being to make it the way that it is. Therefore, A is C. Therefore, the universe depends on a necessary being to make it the way that it is. So then you take each syllogism, each statement in the syllogism, which we call a premise, and here on the right-hand side, you can label it as being inferential or non-inferential. Inferential means that it's something that needs another argument. Non-inferential means it's known without argument, daruri. So this here, then, you can unpack it. And I have another syllogism that unpacks it. And the conclusion of this other syllogism is this syllogism. This is what the syllogism would look like. Mm. So the way that this works is it uses terms. It uses technical terms. So what I prefer to do is I'll come back to this in a second. Let's not use technical terms for a moment. Let's try and understand this first at an intuitive level. Because first we grasp at an intuitive level, and then we learn the technical terms and structure so that we can defend it. At an intuitive level, the idea behind the contingency argument is that everything in the universe is dependent. Contingency means dependency. So what does it mean it's dependent? It means that it needs something else to make it how it is. And we see this intuitively. So I look at the sun, I say, why is it shining? The fact that I say, sun, why are you shining? Means that I can see that it needs something to make it shine. I look at the wind and it's blowing. I say, wind, why are you blowing? The fact that I ask this question means that I see it needs something to make it blow. So the entire scientific enterprise, it assumes that everything in the universe needs an explanation.
So and if when, things need, yeah? Sorry to interrupt, but I just wanted to clarify before cutting you off there. We don't need to really prove that. Number one, it's self-explanatory, self-observable, but also the worldview that we're talking to, the scientific worldview that we're talking to, scientism, also admits that.
Yes.
Okay. Good.
And that's exactly, and okay. That's actually so somebody says that what if somebody denies this, and then so the most effective way to kind of combat it is to say that, well, you can't really do science without it, and since everybody believes in science,
this is musallam. With both sides agree to the concept universe, yeah, is in need of things. Everything in the world that we see is in need of something else.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's the first step. Mm. Now the second step is we want to show that the thing that it's in need of cannot be in need of anything else. And that's what we call a necessary being. So, and this is where we differ with the materialist, with the scientific materialist. We differ with them because they say that that other dependent things in the universe can make things in the universe the way that they are. So they say that it's medicine makes the cure. Fire causes the burning. That's what they say. We say, mm-hmm, no, we dispute that. We say that, no, we agree that they're both dependent, but the dependency of things can only be explained by something that's independent. So there. Now, this argument is made in many different forms, and I chose the one that was actually I take it from Mustafa Sabri in his Mokif. He uses this demonstration. He thinks it's the clearest one. He says that imagine a long line of leaning people. He says that if you have one person and that person is leaning on someone else. Now, what you have a situation where this person who's leaning is dependent and he's being held up by someone else. Now, let's lean this other person back too. When I lean this other person back, there's somebody else holding them up. And now the important thing to observe here is that the thing in the middle now isn't doing anything. Because if the person at the end goes, they all fall down. And this illustrates a principle. And the principle is that if A depends on B and B depends on C, then you B isn't doing anything.
Yeah.
A really just depends on C.
Correct.
So that means that if you explain something in the universe with something else in the universe that's also dependent, then that thing in the universe doesn't really explain it. It's the thing that it depends on that is explaining it. And if everything in the universe is dependent, then nothing in the then you don't have anything to explain what's happening. And so what you need is you need something that doesn't need anything. And it's that thing that's making everything the way that it is. Yep.
Okay. So in this example of dependency, if they're all connected in a circle, okay, so we submit to the line of leaning people. The line of leaning people has to have a wall or a person leaning mm-hmm. them, supporting them. What if, though, they're in a circle?
Yeah.
So circularity.
Yeah. So circularity is, so in the physical example of circularity, in that physical example of circularity, the people who are leaning are not really completely dependent on the thing behind them because they're actually supporting the person ahead of them. So if you actually work out the laws of physics and the way that they work, there's each person in the line is doing something to the person in front of him and then being held by the person behind him. So it's not a situation where things are really completely dependent on something else. So this analogy of the long line of leaning people, it is an analogy. It's not something, we're not saying actually that the things, the contingent things in the universe are all depending on each, are lined up and God is at the end. What we're really saying is that God is holding everything else up immediately. This is a proof by contradiction. It's saying that if contingent things were the only thing, then there would be nothing to hold them up. Mm-hmm. So the situation that best describes the situation that scientists, materialists are dealing with is the long line of leading people. But you can use other analogies too. So one of my students, he said that, you know, the way that what helps him is to, instead of having a line of people, to have somebody standing on the shoulders of somebody else. And that person standing on the shoulders of somebody else. Mm. And then you keep on doing that. And he said, there's no ground. Mm. What happens? They're all falling. Now you can't get in a circle. So you can't, it doesn't help you. So, yeah. And you have other analogies too, but there's this general idea. It's an intuition that if A depends on B, B depends on C, B isn't doing anything, A depends on C. If you get that, then you can get the conclusion.
What have some atheists said in response to this?
So, atheists have yet to respond to this, but there are some responses. I'll come to them. But this form of the argument is not made in the mainstream. There is a contingency argument that Thomas Aquinas made, Leibniz made, but they're not the same because nobody comes to the radical conclusion that the Muslims do, which is that the universe completely depends on God, completely and utterly. But the objections that they normally make are, they can only make one of two objections, because if you put everything into a syllogism, and this is why syllogisms are important. If you put into a syllogism, what is a syllogism? It says that if you accept the first premise, QC1, and you accept the second premise, QC2, you have to accept the conclusion. Mm-hmm. But if you agree A is B, if you agree B is C, you have to agree that A is C. And if you don't agree that A is C, you're only allowed to do that if you disagree with one of the two premises. So what you do in this way is you confine the debate, and the debate now happens on your terms. Mm-hmm. You're not, so now I've confined the debate. So now, in order for an atheist to disagree, he has to disagree with the first premise or he has to disagree with the second premise. So the first premise, the universe is contingent. The only thing he can say, the universe is not contingent. And we already talked about how to kind of respond to that, to say that, well, science presumes contingency. There's other ways too. But the second thing here, there is the most common objection is, the most common objection to the second thing is something called the fallacy of composition.
Okay.
So the fallacy of composition, what I've done here is I've actually cataloged all of the possible objections and their answers. So you can object here, or you can object with the fallacy of composition. So the fallacy of composition, it says that, okay, this thing in the universe is contingent, and this thing in the universe is contingent. The individual things in the universe are contingent, but the universe as a whole is not contingent. Because for you to go from the contingency of the part to the contingency of the whole commits a logical fallacy. You cannot assume that just because the parts are contingent, that the whole is contingent. And they give an example, and they'll say that the bricks in a wall are all small. Does that mean that the entire wall is small? No, it doesn't. To say that because the bricks are small, the wall that is composed of those bricks commits the fallacy of composition. So this is a an objection that they will raise. And so the answer to that objection is to say is you can answer it in a number of different ways. The first way is to say that actually you don't need to say the entire universe is contingent. Just as long as one thing is contingent, it needs a necessary being. So you just kind of sidestep the whole thing. Another way is to say, this is the most comprehensive way, it's to say that, this gets a little bit technical, but you know, it's hopefully like it's okay. But it's to say that the fallacy of composition is an informal fallacy. An informal fallacy means it's a fallacy that's not related to the abstract form of the argument. A is B, B is C, A is C, that's the form. An informal fallacy has to do with the subject matter. So there are cases where inferring, extrapolating the property of the part to the whole is fallacious, such as when you extrapolate the smallness of the brick to the smallness of the wall, that's fallacious. But there's other cases where it's not fallacious. The bricks in the wall are red, therefore the whole wall is red. Correct. The bricks in the wall are heavy, therefore the whole wall is heavy. Correct. The bricks in the wall are hard, therefore the whole wall is hard. Correct. So the question is that if we say the things in the universe are contingent, therefore the whole universe is contingent, is it like saying the bricks in the wall are small, therefore the whole wall is small? Fallacy? Or is it like saying the bricks in the wall are hard, therefore the whole wall is hard? Correct. In like which it's latter. Like the latter.
And it's
clearly like the
latter. Correct. Yeah. And one would also be able to say that every whole is contingent, because by saying whole, you were inferring the existence of parts. Therefore, it is dependent upon parts.
Yep, you could say that.
So a whole can never be separated from its parts and can never have a different essence than its parts.
Yes.
And by nature, a whole must be dependent, right? Mm-hmm. The entire object must be dependent because just by definition, it is consistent of smaller objects, therefore dependent upon them.